Hi, and welcome to Revision Media here with me, Paul Stevenson, at a slightly later time of 16:26 here in the UK, which is 11:26 Central Time and midday 12:26 Eastern Standard Time. Actually, that's not right. It's the other way around. It's 10:26, isn't it, Central Time, and 11:26 Eastern Time. Had a few technical problems logging into Uber, the normal platform we do the show on here on Revision Media. So we'll do it on Skype. Welcome. This is the Monday, the 26th of April, 2021. I hope you're all well, and thank you for joining me here tonight. I will be live on Republic Broadcasting Network in an hour and 35 minutes. That's midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and 6 p.m. UK. Live on the Beyond the Official Narrative show on Republic Broadcasting Network with Richard Carey and special guest E. Michael Jones, the editor of Culture Wars magazine and author of various different books, The Jewish Revolutionary Spirit, Baron Metal, among others. So we'll be live with him at 6 o'clock UK time, as I say. That's 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'd be very interested to hear his views on what's happening in the United States and whether the United States can even survive what's happening as the Bolsheviks run riot and suck the country dry. And will potentially, well, I mean, I'm going to get to that in this show as well. You know, the West is in a very precarious situation. The dependency on China, who's actually running the country, in quotes. I mean, there's a complete fifth column in the United States, and the Western Anglosphere, you know, white European nations, or what used to be white European nations, anyway. And, you know, I don't think the vast majority of people, as much we're aware of, well, some of us are anyway, of the dangers to Western civilization, to the essentially, again, the white European culture, the white race, the dominant ethnic group in the Western nations up until recently. Well, we still are dominant, but if the trends continue, we won't be for very much longer. And our culture has been eradicated. And that's, you know, in the United States, in the UK, in the European countries, in Australia and New Zealand, essentially. So as much as we may be aware of the dangerous and genuine threat that we face, I think there could be a more imminent threat with a world war if we start a world war with China. And that fifth column is sucking the country dry culturally, is destroying the culture, but economically it's printing money into oblivion, and it's going to destroy the economy. And we're in a situation where, you know, printing money is a massive tax. They're going to potentially destroy the dollar. And considering how many U.S. dollars are held outside of the United States, they're not going to hold those for very long. And what they are going to do, and what they have been doing with those dollars, is buying up real assets in the United States, particularly I'm talking about China. Now, the dependency on China is a huge problem, because if we have a war with China, and the central banks know this, and those who are participants in the fifth column in the Western nations know this, and they are literally sucking and the country and the West dry, and will leave it for dead. And I'm not even speaking that figuratively or metaphorically with that, because if a world war came, it'd be so easy for China to even just starve the West. We are so dependent on China that if we were at war, our greatest enemy in that war, which the Western, the usual suspects in the West, the military industrial complex, the central banks, manufacturing a war with China. And if China is that enemy, then China's just going to stop sending us all sorts of stuff, including food. because we're not really producing enough. And if we had a war with China, they could starve us. And I saw an article, and there's a guy I follow, you know, he would be a free market guy, an economist. He's been warning about, you know, the economic disaster that's imminent. Doug Casey. And in his website that he writes for, The International Man, the article here is Doug Casey on the shocking 2025 Deagle forecast, war, population reduction, and the collapse of the West. Now, a year ago when the COVID thing started, I identified three aspects that the COVID would serve. The eradication of our liberties, which we've witnessed, and will be very difficult to wrestle back. Of course, there's so many perverse incentives that a lot of people aren't even interested in wrestling them back. A smokescreen for the economy and to accelerate the money printing and the destruction of Western currencies, and to bring in digital currencies and social credit scores. And the other thing was a war with China. Now, in this article, it says, Deagle, spelled D-E-A-G-E-L, is a private online source for the military capabilities of the world's nation states. It recently released a shocking five-year forecast. The report analyzes countries by projected population size, GDP, defense budget, and more. In it, they predict a 70% reduction in the size of the United States population. This is a bold prediction. What are your thoughts on this? Now, this is what they're predicting, a 70% reduction in the size of the United States population. Now, bear in mind that the white Western nations make up a minority of global population. I mean, the United States and the UK, we don't have children. Our populations are not growing the way that they do in the Middle East, in China, in Africa, etc. But to think that you would then reduce that, you know, demographically, as I say, the Anglosphere countries, the white European originated nations, are a minority of global population, and yet this predicts a 70% reduction. I mean, it's almost a complete eradication of the white nations. Doug Casey answers, he says, I've got to say that I wasn't familiar with Deagle. It keeps a low profile. Deagle is in the same business as Jane's, which has been in the business of analyzing weapons systems for many decades. A look at the Deagle website, which is quite sophisticated, makes it clear we're not dealing with some blogger concocting outrageous clickbait. It seems to be well connected with defense contractors and government agencies like the CIA. They've predicted that about 70% of the U.S. population and about the same percentage in Europe is going to disappear by 2025. It's hard to believe that anybody in their position would make a forecast like that. There's no logical business reason for it, especially since it was done before the COVID hysteria gripped the world. It stretches a reader's credulity. Could it possibly happen? It would be the biggest thing in world history. Does it have a basis in reality, or is it just some bizarre trolling exercise? I'm not sure. It's hard to take almost anything from any source at face value these days. But for the last several years, I've been saying that World War III would basically be a biological war. Of course, it will have substantial conventional, nuclear, space-based, and AI-stroke-computer elements as well. But its most serious component will be biological. Essentially, it will involve the use of bacteria and viruses to wipe out the enemy. The odds are that it will be between the US and China. But since anyone with the CRISPR in their garage can hack the genome and DNA of almost anything and anybody, there are no limits to the possibilities. Certainly from the Chinese point of view, a biological war makes all the sense in the world. That's because the Han Chinese share a lot of genetic similarities. Han spelled H-A-N, Presumably, a bacteria or a virus can be bred to favor the Chinese and take out almost everybody else. The fact is that anything can be done eventually will be done. It's the law of large numbers. Somebody might respond, well, that's horribly racist. Of course it's racist. But when you think about what's behind this and who's always behind the Jew, the international Jew pulling the strings, this would be perfect for them because they hate the white race and they hate Western culture because Western culture and Christianity and the white race has always been a huge problem for these people and they've always failed in their endeavors to have complete control because they've always been blocked by the white European. And they are filled with hate and racist hatred. As Alexander Solzhenitsyn said, filled with race. He said they were driven by ethnic hatred. They slaughtered the Russians and they slaughtered the Christians. So he says, of course it's racist. Not, but from the Chinese point of view, if they have this war thrust upon them, it's not necessarily racist from their point of view because they're just going to make a, you know, they're going to defend themselves with a biological weapon which won't affect their own people and it'll eradicate the enemy. But I don't think China has any interest in a war except when you poke them enough. And the same with Russia. And it was the same with Adolf Hitler in World War II. They get their wars going because they threaten so much that you're left with no option to survive. I mean, you only have to look at Russia's border. It's surrounded, and they call it Russian aggression. God forbid Russia should go to its own border to protect its borders. Notwithstanding rationale and philosophical arguments against it, all ethnic groups and countries are quite naturally racist. Now, this is a good point that Doug Casey makes. And you see, the whole issue of racism has been demonized to the point that there's nothing worse than being racist. Well, it depends what you mean by racist. Really, it's tribalism. I mean, in the 70s and 80s, you had tremendous violence between football teams. Actual violence. A lot of English football teams went to play in Europe and got banned because there was serious riots kicked off after football matches. It was tribalism. Now, when people talk about racism, racism is never really defined. In fact, the threshold and the bar of what constitutes and qualified racism has been seriously low to the point where, I don't know, looking at someone the wrong way, these little hate crimes and microaggressions, these are considered racism and, you know, the whole unconscious thing and all that. You're not talking about anybody actually wanting to cause harm to another race. And in this context, it's always the white man who's the racist and everyone else is victims. The irony is the white man, to his own pathological altruistic detriment, is the least racist of all. As he witnesses his culture, his heritage, and his basic existence being obliterated, subjugated, and in a position which will be lucky to survive. You go to India, if you go to Africa, if you go to China, you'll see real racism. And the so-called minorities who come here, a lot of them know that, particularly the people who have arrived from those countries. They know how racist China is. They know how racist India is. They know how racist Africa is. And they just laugh at us. What a bunch of fools. What a bunch of clowns we are. And they know we're the least racist people in the world because no one else would tolerate it. There isn't this multicultural phenomena in 95% of the world. There's pockets of it here and there in South America and everything else. But China is very ethnically cohesive. Same in the Middle East. It's the Arab peoples, to boil it down to some sort of common denominator, brown people, let's say. I know there's squabbles within those groups, and that's how they know about racism, because there's different little groups there, and they have tremendous hatred for each other. But largely, it's only Europe where you have this absurd and tragic multiculturalism occurring. And really, again, what I said, nowadays you're not talking about this racism in the cultural context of cultural Marxism the threshold and the bar has been lowered so much. It doesn't, you know, they've had to, in the absence of any real evidence of the white man being racist, they've had to create it. They call it institutional racism. That's basically racism where there's, you know, where there's actually no evidence for real racism. Certainly there's little or no evidence for racism in the way that you might think it would be a problem, where you're actually a threat to another group, with, you know, a violent threat, really. There is no such violent threat. There is no such white supremacist, far-right extremist terrorist groups, no matter how much they tell you there is. They define that by people who won't comply and won't go along with the plundering of their nation and their heritage and their peoples and their culture. That's what they define as racism. But Casey is right here. All groups, all ethnic groups will have a certain, if you want to call it racism, stroke tribalism. Racism doesn't have to be a bad thing. Essentially, I mean, again, if it's a genuine threat to another group, then yeah, you could call that bad. It's uncivilized. This isn't guilty of white people particularly. It is actually guilty of a lot of other people, other ethnic groups around the world and races around the world. But the point is, it is a natural phenomenon. It is a tribalist thing. It's only the international Jew and his media and his other tentacles of influence have drummed this up for his own benefit because of his hatred towards the white man, for the destruction of the white man and his culture. So Casey says, all ethnic groups and countries are quite naturally racist. Yeah, each national group has its own tribalism too. It's perfectly normal, and it doesn't have to be an unhealthy thing. That's how a nation is formed, by having certain traits, certain ethnic similarities, cultural similarities, similarities in dress and food, all the tentacles that, you know, that make the anatomy of a nation. And including, in my opinion, for the most part, it does include an ethnic component. Otherwise, you just wouldn't refer to anybody as anybody. You know, we have people who are French. We have people who are... France is called France for a reason. Germany is called Germany for a reason. There are distinctives. Even within countries which are very, very similar to each other in Europe, France is a different nation from Germany for a reason. There are cultural nuances and distinctives of each nation and peoples, which have taken hundreds of years in most cases to form. The article goes on, a fear of different racial and ethnic groups has been bred into humans as a survival mechanism over the hundreds of thousands of years since we became biologically modern. I don't even think it has to take hundreds of thousands of years to do that. I think it can take just centuries. All races and ethnic groups like to think that they're the best. Again, let's go back to the football team analogy. You have that tribalism where Manchester United think they're better than Liverpool. Liverpool think they're better than Manchester United and Arsenal, and their supporters feel the same way. And we have witnessed genuine violence down through the years with something as innocuous and as insignificant, really, as football. But it occurs, and it doesn't get anywhere near the condemnation that this so-called racism of this, you know, that occurs in the white European peoples, which they have to create, because it's largely absent. So all races and ethnic groups like to think that they're the best or the most worthy, and that non-members are other, perhaps only marginally human. Biological warfare plays directly into feelings. Americans, who like everybody else see themselves as, quote, the good guys, believe we're immune to that. However, don't forget that the U.S. pioneered bio warfare. Fort Detrick, Maryland, has been an epicenter of it for over 70 years, and there are undoubtedly many other more clandestine sites where U.S. government agencies are working on biological warfare. I would make a distinction there where it's U.S. government agencies, which are part of a fifth column and not the United States and its people generally. No doubt the Chinese and other major war powers are working clandestinely as well. It's not something anybody wants to advertise for many reasons. What shocks me is not that a bio-war has been researched or even actively war-gamed, but that a connected organization like Deagle is actually saying it publicly. It's not like what goes on in the spook community is an open book. Deagle doesn't explicitly say what exactly will cause the great die-off, but there are many advantages to biological warfare over other types of warfare, so it will probably be featured. It's probably inevitable now that the technology has made it practical. What are the advantages of biowar? What might wargaming generals like about it? First, it doesn't destroy material. That's a huge plus. After all, what's the point of conquering a country if all you have to show for it is a smoking radioactive ruin? That's the major advantage of the neutron bomb, of course. It kills the people, but limits damage to buildings. Bioweapons essentially make atom weapons obsolescent. Second, bioweapons can be structured to attack only certain racial groups. That's potentially either a big advantage or a disadvantage to China. The diverse population of the US could also be either an advantage or a disadvantage, depending on who strikes first. But on the bright side, you can perhaps immunize your own population, or at least the military and essential workers, to control the damage. Third, bioweapons are very cheap and easy to fabricate. Anyone with access to a good high school chemistry lab is in business. There's no need for expensive and tricky U-235 or, for that matter, any of the junk toys the Pentagon spends hundreds of billions on. Fourth, bioweapons don't need sophisticated delivery systems. Again, no need for B-2s, B-52s, cruise missiles, ICBMs, or any of that. A sick tourist or two or a few packages sent in the mail can get the job done. Fifth, bioweapons, whether they're viruses or bacteria, not only offer plausible deniability, but the potential to blame a third party. You can launch an attack, and nobody can really be sure who did it. Is this, you know, have we seen a the coronavirus being a foreshadowing for the main act? To see how people react. Because let's face it, do any of us really know where the coronavirus started? Or even that an attack is in fact being launched? There's every advantage to biological warfare from an aggressor's point of view, and the aggressor doesn't even have to be a nation state, which is of course another excuse for governments to further clamp down on their populations, as COVID has shown. Guns are good self-defense weapons, and governments are trying to eliminate them. Basement biowar labs are strictly offensive. Imagine the bureaucratic enforcement possibilities. In addition, Deagle included a lengthy disclaimer which states, after COVID, we can draw two major conclusions, and this is really, really sort of both interesting and disconcerting, and to put it mildly, just spooky. The Western world's success model, number one, has been built over societies with no resilience that can barely withstand any hardship, even a low-intensity one. We are a weak, flabby kind of a people, and that is not by accident. You know, suicide rates are up. People are at breaking point because, you know, they can't go to nightclubs, they can't go to bars, stuff like that. I mean, we're really not, we've become so kind of spoilt and enjoyed so many sort of liberties and, you know, and for many of us, you know, I don't know whether luxuries are the word, you know, but privileges. How many of us know what it's like to go hungry for a day and not eat for a day? I can't remember the last day that I haven't had a meal. The younger generation coming through, when I'm out at work and I see young guys coming through who are 20, 21, 22, I mean, these guys struggle to work. They just don't know how to get through a day's work. They're lazy, they're smoking weed. there's this whole mental health model that's been brought into our thinking, where people think, you know, they're struggling all the time, and, oh, I can only cope with this and I can only cope with that. And you know, there's not a lot of toughness around in Western society anymore. And this Deagle organization has noted this, that societies with no resilience that can barely withstand any hardship, even a low intensity one. It was assumed, but we got the full confirmation beyond any doubt. And he's referring to Deagle here saying after what they've witnessed with COVID. Number two, the COVID crisis will be used to extend the life of this dying economic system through the so-called Great Reset. Now, the article goes on. Doug, you've written extensively about the economic, political, cultural, and social decline in the U.S. long before it became a popular topic of discussion. Has anything changed in your perspective on the future of the United States? Casey answers, no. I'm afraid the election of the actual Bolsheviks in 2020. Now, Casey doesn't muck around. He doesn't muck around with the race. In fact, he's a guy I'd love to interview. And he doesn't muck around when he identifies what the problem is. It's the Bolsheviks. It's the same people that destroyed Russia in the 20th century, killed the Tsar, slaughtered the Christians and the Russians, and slaughtered and destroyed that country and Eastern Europe for the best part of a century. That's who and what we're dealing with. And I actually am sick and tired of people talking about woke. Like, woke is something new. Woke is just an acceleration of the Bolshevik agenda. It's an intensification and an acceleration of the Bolsheviks' agenda. That's what it is. It's gone from political correctness into this woke thing, which is basically Bolsheviks taking over. Casey says, again, I'm afraid the election of the actual Bolsheviks in 2020, and I don't use that term lightly, has sealed its fate. Not to mention that the I've never heard of this word, nomenclatura in most major cities and states are cut from the same cloth. In point of fact, the U.S. is in such a self-destructive path that the Chinese don't have to do anything in order to win. All they need to do is lay back and be quiet. The West is destroying itself. So they've got the fifth column destroying it internally, and then an enemy can come and, as I say, just pick off the whatever bones are left on the meat, which won't be much. We are dealing with a parasitic fifth column, and they are hell bent on, in my opinion, absolute and total destruction of the West. These people are demonically charged. As for the COVID crisis, it impresses me as 80% hysteria. A bad flu season that has been blown out of proportion. It's well known, insofar as anything can be known, considering the abysmal quality of reporting and the extreme politicization of the issue, that COVID mainly affects the elderly, the sick, and the obese. The average age of descendants is 80. However, the ages of those who die are rarely mentioned. The media reports the number of COVID cases constantly, but that's meaningless as counting who gets a common cold. And the other thing is, you know, people, when they talk about flu as an epidemic, you know, flu as a, you know, as a problem every year, how many people don't report flu, you know? How many people just get flu, they go to bed for 4 days, and, you know, how do they know how many people get flu? So he says this is meaningless as counting who gets the common cold. Anyway, aren't all those who get infected become immune? Excuse me. A virus like the Hong Kong flu, the Asian flu, the bird flu, and the swine flu goes viral, then goes away. Even the Spanish flu, which is actually serious, came and went without destroying the economy. Nonetheless, the public has been so terrorized and so indoctrinated that they're panicking to take potentially dangerous experimental injections, even though there are numerous cheap drugs that can mitigate the virus after diagnosis. They're never prescribed. The opinions of physicians and world-class scientists who differ with Fauci, and you could say the same thing over here with our Chris Whitty and our equivalents of Fauci, an overpaid lifelong government employee, are actively suppressed. Yeah, we've never really been, you know, it's quite clear that there's an agenda when they not only don't take other credible scientists and virologists and epidemiologists' views into consideration, but they actually disgracefully slur these credible scientists and physicians and virologists and run their names through the muck as best they can. As he says, so anybody who differs from Fauci, and we all have our equivalents, are actively suppressed. However, this is a whole different subject. There is one thing I question about Deagle's statement that you quoted. Quote, the COVID crisis will be used to extend the life of this dying economic system through something called the Great Recess, unquote. That's a very odd statement because the crisis isn't extending the life of the dying economic system. It's putting the final nail in its coffin. It would be nice to hear how they figure that out, as COVID seems to be medically vastly overblown. The Great Reset has nothing to do with preserving the current economic system. It's about formalizing a new one after the other one, as he says, has his final nails put in his coffin. Here's a wild and crazy thought. What if the real problem isn't so much the COVID virus itself? What if the real problem is the new vaccines? What if, after X number of months or years, they turn out to have very deadly effects? Which is why I wouldn't take one. I mean, it's all right saying I took the virus and I feel fine. Okay, cool. Will you still feel fine in a year? Will you still feel fine in 2 years? Or are you suddenly going to find the vast, swathes of our population are suddenly going to, suffer from terrible cancers and God knows what else after 3 or 4 years of it? There's a reason new drugs are tested over a period of years, which is far from the case here. Ted Turner, Bill Gates, and numerous others who think they're, quote, elite, have long said that the Earth's population ought to be reduced radically, perhaps by 80%. Is it too shocking to believe that some group would take advantage of this to cull the human population? It's something that would be hard to believe even in a science fiction novel, but it now appears to be technically feasible. History is replete, overrun, actually, with psychos who try to destroy everybody once they get in power. In point of fact, science fiction is a much better predictor of the future than any think tank has ever been. So maybe there's a Dr. Evil at large, anxious to eliminate deplorables and other undesirables. If he exists, I doubt today's woke transgender version of James Bond can counter him. Who knows where this is going? But it's the wrong direction, and the trend is still accelerating. The disclaimer in the Deagle report goes on to say, the collapse of the Western financial system and ultimately the Western civilization has been the major driver in the forecast, along with the confluence of crisis with a devastating outcome. As COVID has proven, Western societies embracing multiculturalism and extreme liberalism are unable to deal with any real hardship. Yeah, I mean, you think about it, these like safe spaces and all the rest of it. I mean, it's just they have been deliberately softened up. Is the Western civilization seeing a confluence of crisis coming together in a perfect storm? Casey answers, that's a very good point. It seems like everything is starting to happen at once and at a hyperbolically accelerating rate. While the worlds of science and technology are approaching Ray Kurzweil's utopian singularity, the worlds of politics and sociology are approaching a dystopian anti-singularity. Let's briefly look at the financial, economic, social, and political aspects of this potential collapse. We're absolutely en route to a gigantic financial crisis, featuring the destruction of the US dollar, and with it the savings of a large percentage of the planet's people will be impoverished because their savings are in dollars. Much of the value people thought they had in stocks, bonds, real estate, pensions, and insurance could disappear. That's bad enough. But what's worse are the economic consequences. We're likely to see wholesale unemployment. We're already seeing it. A collapse in business activity. We're already seeing it. And corporate bankruptcies, even while taxes go up radically. And we've already seen that. I'm increasingly of the opinion there will be a crack-up boom along the way. However, we might be entering that as we speak. What's even worse are the social ramifications, such as critical race theory, which emphasizes the differences between race groups, creating actual race hatred to one particular race. One consequence of the financial and economic upsets will be riots like those of 2020, and we're already seeing these in 2021, with the Derek Chauvin case. And God knows what would happen if justice should prevail and the justice system should actually do what it should do and call that a mistrial. The mass immigration of people from alien cultures who don't share Western values into the US and Europe is destabilizing. Which is obviously, to people who listen to this show, stating the obvious. The US has, in fact, become a multicultural domestic empire. So has Europe. The political consequences are evident. The Biden administration in Washington, D.C. are exactly the same personality types who took over Russia in 1917 or France in 1789. There it is. They aren't going to let go of the apparatus of power now they've got it. They will find a way to reinstall themselves in 2024. What about the military? The U.S. spends something like $1 trillion on defense annually, but nobody knows for certain. These budgets are complicated. Military spending is hidden here, there, and everywhere. It doesn't defend the United States. It just antagonizes foreigners. And, yeah, and in the meantime, from the Middle East, it creates all this displacement and then funnels them up into Europe. It's also interesting that the Department of Defense is now trying to root out conservative political views from the rank-and-file soldiers. But let's get back to what could collapse the population of North America and Europe. And I understand here we're running over by 5 minutes, but this is an incredible article. By over 50%. So let's go back to what could collapse the populations of North America and Europe by over 50%. By the way, World War One and World War Two did a pretty good job of culling the white European. Perhaps Deagle is anticipating a serious collapse of complex society because food won't be grown, processed, and sent to cities. Maybe COVID is seen as just a catalyst. Most people in today's highly urbanized world, from cubicle dwellers to ghetto rats, are incapable of surviving for more than a week if supply chains break. Now, this is how vulnerable we are. The report also discusses a prediction regarding a potential war that involves Russia and China against the U.S. The questioner here asks, what are your thoughts on this? Is it likely we'll see a conflict of this kind during the 1920s? Casey says, as I said earlier, a war, at least with China, seems inevitable, and I've said the same thing. It will likely be formed by the U.S., fermented by the U.S., because as the economy goes bad, governments always look for somebody else, an outsider, to blame. At this point, and I recognize this will outrage jingoists and nationalists, the U.S. government is actually the most dangerous force on the face of the planet, much more dangerous than the Chinese, the Russians, or anybody else. Why? The U.S. government is unique and actively and aggressively looking for trouble absolutely everywhere, sticking its nose into everything. Only the U.S. has troops in 100 other countries and is fighting hot wars and several more. It's said, for instance, that the Russians are aggressors because they retake the Crimea and the Donbass region. I don't even think they did. Most Americans, who can't even find these places on the map, are unaware that Crimea had been part of Russia since it was taken from the Ottomans in the 18th century and is mostly populated by ethnic Russians. Yeah, and they voted overwhelmingly to be part of Russia again back in 2016, I think it was. Nikita Khrushchev arbitrarily transferred it from the Russian SSR to the Ukrainian SSR in 1954 for personal political reasons shortly after Stalin's death. The current problem started only after the U.S. fermented a coup d'etat, a so-called color revolution in Ukraine in 2014. It then made sense for Putin to retake it, much like the U.S. tried to overthrow Castro after he ousted Batista. In any event, it's a problem between Russia and Ukraine and none of our business. The Biden's regime butting in is somewhat analogous to Russia threatening war over the U.S. owning Puerto Rico. Exactly. We don't need a serious war with Russia over nothing. Taiwan is similar. Historically, it's just a secessionist Chinese province, or not. Perhaps it's a government in exile, but no matter. These are meaningless legalisms. Frankly, I'm on the side of Taiwan, but it's none of our business whether they go to war with each other. U.S. government intervention could easily start a conflict with China. It might end with the sinking of a couple of U.S. carrier groups, or it might evolve into World War III. And, of course, we're still in Afghanistan, Central Asia, and the Middle East, plus Africa and God knows where else. I will leave it there, folks, but that's a longer article. In fact, let me stay with it. It's nearly finished. The U.S. is unnecessarily and stupidly whacking hornet's nest everywhere in the world, bankrupting itself and making enemies, setting the stage for something really significant. Editor's note, the 2020s will likely to be an increasingly volatile time. More governments are putting their money printing on overdrive. Negative interests are becoming the rule instead of an exception. One thing is for sure. There will be a great deal of change taking place in the years ahead. That's precisely why legendary speculator Doug Casey and his team released an urgent new report titled Doug Casey's Top 7 Predictions for the Raging 2020s. I thought that was a fantastic article. It recovers so much there. It sort of encapsulates a lot of what we've been talking about over the last year and, you know, over the last 5 years, really. That's from Doug Casey's International Man. The article's called Doug Casey on the Shocking 2025 Deagle, spelled D-E-A-G-E-L, Forecast War, Population Reduction, and the Collapse of the West. And that's a very disconcerting article, to say the least, if you're a white European. I'll leave it there, folks. We'll be back again next Monday, same time, midday Central Time. Sorry, 10 a.m. Central Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. here in the UK. Please do join me with Richard Carey on the Beyond the Official Narrative broadcast on Republican Broadcasting Network in an hour's time. We'll be live with E. Michael Jones. That's midday Republican Broadcasting Network, Beyond the Official Narrative, midday Central Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. here in the UK. Until then, folks, take care, God bless, and prepare in every way you can for the storm that's no doubt coming, and it's already here. It's just going to get worse. Until then, take care, God bless.